You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
Oh, can't complain. Let me introduce this. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of Non-Zero Newsletter. This is a Non-Zero Podcast. You're Paul Bloom, publisher of the highly regarded, possibly the most highly regarded potato-based Substack, and one of the two best Substacks called Small Potatoes, and plus a globe-trotting and world-famous psychologist. We'll get back to that, because once again, your work has gotten attention in elite media. Congratulations.
In the liberal New York Times, of all places.
Let's don't boast, Paul, okay? Also, let's keep them in suspense. We want to maximize engagement. We want them to keep watching the YouTube, even after they smash the like button.
I did a Substack live thing with this guy who has the Substack, Bentham's Bulldog, utilitarian. We just had a conversation. And as you do it, when people hit the like button, hearts fly up. And I'm talking, hearts are flying. I'll tell you, there's nothing like it.
Nothing like a live stream with a lot of engagement. Yeah, you know what? There's nothing more depressing than a live stream without any engagement.
It's a real
high wire act when you do these live streams. I'm a little skittish about them. But Paul,
there was one where Jonah Lehrer comes. I'm going to get it, but there's one where Jonah Lehrer came back to public life.
The disgraced, discredited Jonah. I don't want to be too hard on him, but what did he do? He made up Bob Dylan quotes. What did he do?
You know, we can talk about this. It's important. We should get back into the news stories, since this is like 10 years old or something. But
he was a pop writer about psychology,
about neuroscience. I met him once. I was on stage with him. Perfectly nice guy. He self-plagiarized a fair amount, which I think is a really minor
sin.
Who among us? But he then made a sort of a recovery thing where he stood up on stage at this big conference of some sort. And behind him, they had the constant Twitter feed, the live feed of people responding to him as he's talking. And it did not go well. A lot of people had bad feelings towards him. And so he's there giving a perfectly good talk, and on the screen, as you know, get off the stage, you motherfucker. And I just like, Anyway.
Well, Paul, you know, we were talking about what we were going to talk about. Remember that? And I was like thinking about great problems confronting humankind, climate change, nuclear proliferation, war, famine, pestilence, and so on. You, on the other hand, said, Bob, I have only two words for you. And what were those two words, Paul?
Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, you were revved up about this. I mean, frankly, I think more revved up than really befits a man your age when the woman in question is her age and scantily clad. But why do you explain how this whole thing? Oh, speaking of which, I have some Jeffrey Epstein updates later. But anyway,
is it reference to my age?
Speaking of Paul Bloom, I have some Jeffrey Epstein updates later.
I do not know how you found in those logs or those files. So Sydney Sweeney is an actress. I actually know her from being on The White Lotus season one. But but she's
that's all I've ever seen of her until this week.
Popular show Euphoria, I think, on HBO, where she was a star, and she was also in Saturday Night Live. An attractive young woman. And the most recent fervor, there were different fervors. At one point when she was on Saturday Night Live, Richard Hanania, who is a cultural commentator of an interesting past,
interesting white nationalist past that he concealed until it was revealed. Go ahead.
It's the difference between you and me. You know, I just say interesting.
It's like, you're like Jonah Lehrer, perfectly nice guy, and I'm like Jonah Lehrer, scoundrel, and so on. Okay.
You're like a fact checker.
I'm a journalist, Paul. My job is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Go ahead.
I'm an entertainer.
And in these cases, afflict the afflicted, but anyway.
Yeah, you're doing a lot of afflicting people who've already got quite a bit of affliction. Anyway, he argued that she, and particularly her breasts, spelled the end of woke. In a Twitter comment that ensued 5 billion views or something like that.
That was a while ago.
I know.
That was when she was on the fact that she was on Saturday Night Live with such a low cut garment led him to say woke is dead for some reason. Okay.
You're trying to outclass me by using words like garment.
Anyway, I wouldn't have to go that far, frankly, since you're the one who wanted to talk about Sydney Sweeney, but go ahead.
He was mad. Look, there's some quote about discovering a universe in a grain of sand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Sydney Sweeney case, although in some way, what makes it pleasant, given all the rough things we talk about, is how much it doesn't matter. But I think it says a lot about politics, about culture, about sexuality, about America, about who we are as a people, really. Anyway, she is doing a series of ads for American Eagle, which sells jeans.
Uh-huh.
And the running theme of the ads is, there's like a, they always show the things like, Sydney Sweeney has great genes, G-E-N-E-S, like she has a great genetic capacity. But then the joke is, they end up crossing out genes and putting genes, J-E-A-N-S.
You get it.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Second gene spun.
So this has inspired some reaction to it.
Can I say, if you haven't seen the things, it's also, we might say they're a little bit on the racy side, the ads. Wait a second. Now, when I first saw a reference this on Twitter, and I thought, like, what is this shit? What's this controversy about? And I watched the ads. At first, I thought, and this is just a testament to how old I am, and maybe how naive I am, and perhaps how pure of heart I am. But my first theory was like, well, maybe, I don't know, some conservative Christians got upset about how they are kind of, one of them is like, like she's zipping up her pants and the particular angle on the cleavage is kind of unconventional anyway, I just want to say some of them are kind of racy. And my first theory was, well, is it the raciness or what? And the more I learned about what the controversy was about, the more I thought, are we really wasting our fucking time on this shit? But, Paul, you insisted.
You and I have a three-episode series. We're going to delve into this.
This is just the beginning.
So there's two aspects of it. And so one aspect was that people, I'm not sure, what I'm going to say is I'm not sure if it's true or whether it's just sort of purported to be true, blown out of proportion, but people see the connection between the claim that she's this attractive, blonde, white woman, mm-hmm. who coincidentally or not coincidentally turns out to be Republican. And the idea that the focus on her genes is some sort of shout out to eugenics, to the sinister movement from the American past that focuses on people's genetic endowment so as to breed a master race.
Maybe it was the Hanania. Do you think it was the fact that there was this distant Hanania connection that made people go in that? Because that seems to me like a weird reach, I got to say. Like, where does that come from?
It seemed like a very weird reach. And then I sort of thought, is this the kind of thing where everybody says, oh, those ridiculous people, often ridiculous people on the right, this time ridiculous people on the left, have this ridiculous obsession, let's mock them endlessly. And it turns out that all the energy is attacking like one guy on Twitter who may or may not exist. But mm-hmm. there is a Salon magazine thing where they said this is very eugenics like and it's a shout out to eugenics. I don't actually think, if you think about it, this the dad joke that this all runs on is she talks about her genes, but then she's really talking about which does sound very essentialist and biological, but the message here is that's not what makes her so special, it's what she's wearing, the genes, which we could all wear.
Ooh, that was a good way to subvert the twisting
narrative.
That was good.
So there's that. And so people like J.D. Vance and our favorite president, Donald Trump, have, of course, weighed in on this, mocking the left for this. Again, I'm not so sure. I've seen stuff. People have found people on the left to say this is eugenics and this is American Eagle's doing a dog whistle to racists and eugenicists all around. But then there's something else. And I want to, if I may, steel man this.
You may.
People are saying there's something bad about this because we have now moved to this because she is a very stereotypically attractive young woman and using her beauty to sell clothes, which I do not think is an exceptional
thing.
Which
has never been done before, by the way.
it was a pioneering move
in the market.
It was a cheat code. Why don't we have somebody attractive sell our products?
It's weird.
But you might see it as a reaction, as maybe Richard and Amy, as a reaction to a period where a lot of places like Abercrombie and Finch and some other places would have models that were not stereotypically attractive, plus size models, older people, disabled people. They just would not, they wouldn't normally be doing it. And I will steel man that and say there was something, that movement may well be dead, but there was something kind of nice about it, to try to open things up, to try to say that, that, you know, we can get people who are not stereotypically attractive and who have not won the genetic lottery for looks. And they too can do our products. And there's something a little bit lost if we didn't just go back to the using the, and this is for male models as well as female models, the fraction of 1% of people who are genetically gifted, so that they immediately, you know, strike everybody as insanely gorgeous. So I will say there's something, you know, a little bit like this retro move, this anti-woke move that American Eagle is doing. There's something a little bit lost.
So is this the woke Paul Bloom whose emergence we've been waiting for lo these many months?
I've been holding it back. I've been, you know, I've been for more than months. I don't know. I just, honestly, I find the attacks on these ads so ridiculous. I'm driven in my contrarian spirit to find something of value in them.
I almost, so is the eugenics thing, is that the main source of the controversy?
Yeah.
I almost can't believe it. That's so ridiculous. I mean, I mean, it just takes so much kind of overreading. Now, it is true. You know, I went to a Wikipedia page in response to the controversy.
You do research for these things.
Oh, look, folks, these things don't just happen. Come
on. As you said, you're a journalist. And so you just hit Wikipedia.
So I immediately devoted hours to researching this. And the first part was to go to Wikipedia. She did grow up in Idaho. And I got to say, if you ask, like, which states have the, like, highest per capita number of pro-eugenics white nationalists, I suspect Idaho would be in the running. But
and there's also, by the way, a potato connection.
Well, in Idaho, there's always a potato connection. I was waiting for you to make that connection. Yeah. But elaborate.
My Substack.
Man, you never miss the opportunity for
always party. Be closing.
So anyway, but still, I mean, come on, the idea. Okay, she says, I have good genes, and that's a joke. I mean, that's like a phrase. You say it about people say it. And it's not just eugenicists who say it, it's long been said. And then I gather step two in the argument that this was a eugenics dog whistle. Is that she's Nordic? She has blonde hair and like white skin. Again, not the only model who does. Although it's also true that, you know, she is a throwback to an earlier kind of model. Not just because models went woke in the, fairly recently in the way you described, and I woke in quotes. I mean, this is the stereotype for that genre of ad, whatever. You know, but because models for some time now have just been getting less stereotypical, I don't know, less like voluptuous and, you know, kind of classically Hollywood, old-fashioned Hollywood, attractive, maybe more androgynous, thinner, maybe too thin. Anyway, the whole, this, it's true that this is like a restoration of like, you know, I don't know, early 1960s modeling values or something. You're in favor of it, right? Oh no, you're not. I forgot. You're woke.
There's a four dimensional. Four dimensional chess, Bob. There's a four dimensional chess argument here that American Eagle.
So we're not done. More of your argument is coming.
About Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah.
Oh no, we're just beginning.
No. This is what I'm trying to say. The unbridled enthusiasm with which you advocated our focusing on Sidney Sweeney, again, I think is a little bit unbecoming, you know, of a man of your... Look, you're not as old as I am, but it's such a breakout, dude.
About the obsession we've been having with Elon Musk and Donald Trump.
What?
They're genuinely
important.
Yes, they. There is an argument that they are more genuinely important. Nonetheless, there's a four-dimensional chess thing here.
Okay.
That American Eagle knew what it was doing. They came close enough to sort of sending out these code words. They knew they would agitate people on the far extreme. And whereupon they, could then become the champion of people ridiculing these crazy leftists. Okay, but here's something more substantial and true. There is a small circle, a not significant circle of the political left for whom notions like IQ, heredity, and genes are seen as vaguely sinister. And so a while ago, the New Yorker had something on John Haidt, and it was negative. And they wanted to say, in the course of it, they said, I think either New Yorker or New York Times, but it could have been New Yorker. They said, and Haidt believes that some traits are heritable, carried on by the genes, as sinister stuff. Well, of course, every psychologist accepts that large psychological traits are to some extent inherited. Anybody who's a serious scientist of any sort believes in the power of genes to shape one's personality. Everybody who's serious about the mind agrees there's some sort of construct of intelligence or intelligences that guide us. But somehow these things have taken this evil tint. So an ad that mentions the word genes is somehow, you know, viewed as horrible. And I think we got to do a better job of promoting our science so that this doesn't happen.
But as for the IQ, I think one reason for this is that there is now more of a distinct political movement of people who are eugenics adjacent/eugenics advocates even.
Yeah.
But who kind of give out creepy vibes, who are absolutely obsessed with IQ and have a particular, and by the way, I think you can have a good debate about the extent to which IQ, there really is this unified thing called intelligence whose essence you're tapping into with an IQ test. I'm a skeptic. I mean, I'm not against standardized tests of various kind that measure cognitive abilities, but the whole G thing, you know, like, is there this thing called G? I don't know.
You don't think that, in addition to everything else, all the many ways which were different, there is something which you could roughly call smart or intelligence, and some people have more of it than others?
Well, yeah, but no. I mean, there's some people I think of as smarter than others. But that's not the same as saying that IQ is not an egregious oversimplification of the things that constitute intelligence. And it's not the same thing as saying that there are wild variations in the particular assembly of intelligences that different people who we call intelligence have. I mean, Elon Musk is a good example. Very smart in some ways. Can't read the fucking room. Can't get a sense for what the person next to him is thinking. Whereas a lot, most people would.
People who are tremendously socially gifted, who have no mathematical or spatial abilities and so on. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, my spatial abilities are demonstrably bad, and I was informed of that after taking a standardized test in high school. And yet, Paul, when people ask you, is Bob smart? Surely your reply is. Is?
Well,
I would say
I can't answer. What is smart anyway?
That's what I'm saying.
No,
That was some 5D chess, dude. I backed you into that answer.
Okay, so
we're on the same page. Thank you.
I say Bob is smartest attack, which is one of the official. They're smartest attack.
I think you're either sharpest attack.
Oh, that's
true. Or you're smartest.
I think you'd be a smarty pants, which technically is different.
No one would ever see that about.
The IQ between 120 and 128 is smarty pants.
So, is there more to your pioneering take on Sydney? What's her last name? Sweeney.
Mm-hmm. No, that's about it. I kind of ran out a little while ago.
Well, that was well worth the money. So, folks, smash those like buttons. And don't unsmash them just because you thought Paul would have more to say about Sydney Sweeney.
Now's the time to become a paid subscriber.
I don't know. I still have trouble believing this thing became as big as it did. And did it really become big, or is it only kind of on Twitter it became big?
So that's actually something from a sort of political standpoint, which there are things that are big just because they're big. In other words, mm-hmm. they're not big because they connect to something that's real. They're big because they are very quickly talked about and are sort of socially contagious. The Coldplay couple, you know, for a minute, it blazed like the biggest news story in the world. That will fade. The Sydney Sweeney thing will fade pretty soon. In 5-10 years, we won't be talking about it at all. But still.
I think the Coldplay thing was more genuinely significant. Okay. That's my take.
I was at a baseball game yesterday with my wife. We were some family, Toronto Blue Jays. We got smoked by Kansas City, but nonetheless. And when a kiss cam, they have this camera which goes, and we decided we're going to jump for cover if it came. But probably everybody thinks that.
That'll become a thing.
I'm sure the joke's been used.
And then there will be these AI versions of it that are fake. It's going to get, the rabbit hole will get deep.
But you sound tired of all of this.
I sound that way, or is it just because I told you beforehand that I was sleep deprived?
I don't mean tired like sleep deprived.
Oh, world weary.
Like, then the memes will come and it'll be this and this, and then the Atlantic article saying we're overreacting, then the New York Times retrospective. And then, you know, Blue Sky will have a little thing about it, and 1,000 subs, and life goes on.
Well, I gotta say, I do wish people would focus a little more on things that matter. Look, who am I to judge or preach? You know, they don't have to join me in my crusade to save the world. They can keep talking about Sydney Sweeney.
Okay, let's take a. So now we move to Billy Joel.
We're going from from one extreme to the other, from low gravitas to like high gravitas. Billy Joel. Now, okay, for younger people, Billy Joel was a singer. He's still alive, right? But
yes,
he hit it big in the 70s. I think Piano Man was his first big song.
Then he became
This reliable source of pop music hits. And I found some of the songs appealing. And he also holds the distinction of being the worst dancer among all known pop musicians. Have you ever seen him try to dance?
I haven't.
Look at the video for, I think it's Uptown Girl.
Yeah.
Where he's going through these like steps, and it's, oh my God, it's so painful to watch him try to do these steps.
He's an unlikely rock star in many ways.
The man has no rhythm. He literally has no rhythm, Paul.
Still, he's a lovely, lovely lyricist, lovely singer. I'm a big fan and a legend. It was interesting. So it's a 5-hour documentary broken up into two halves. The first half is all the songs you know and love. Second half, he's starting to lose a bit of momentum. And then this is a while ago. He gets sick of writing. He's just sick of lyrics. Like, just runs out of steam. Puts forth a classical set of works, which doesn't get such a good reception. Basically, more or less retires. Raises a couple of kids. Finally goes back to a concert, sells out concerts, does his thing. But he stopped writing songs at a certain point. It made me wonder, when will we run out of steam?
I've run out of. You just said I seem weary.
Just run out. I mean, it's today. Like, you just
today. We're watching it, folks.
It's not the same as running out of steam.
History in the making. The day Bob went from extremely unproductive to extremely, extremely unproductive.
Okay.
But Paul,
I'm gonna let you choose the next topic.
No, here's this topic. The phase of Billy Joel's career that we should refer to as what? Stasis or what? Alcohol play a role?
Alcohol did play a role.
Yeah, okay. I think he kind of buried the lead. The man was a drunk, right?
For a large part of his career, he had a pretty serious alcohol problem. He went on tour with Elton John for a while, and then they broke up over his drinking.
Really?
Yeah.
It's also amazing.
The documentary is very nice about this. But it's possible that he was not entirely faithful to many of his wives.
One of whom was, who was the model he married?
Christine Brinkley.
Christie Brinkley, Sports Illustrated model originally, right?
Who was interviewed in it and seems like a wonderful, funny, vivacious person. And the documentary was done with Billy Joel's help. So on one side of it, I've read criticisms that he took it kind of easy on him about a bunch of things. But mm-hmm. also they had access to interviews with his daughter, with most of his wives, three out of four of them, with a lot of his friends. Bruce Springsteen is on there. Pink, a lot of other musicians express. Bruce Springsteen says, you know, I forget what he was saying, but he says, Billy Joel is much better at this than I am. I think he was talking about the lyrics or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Like, he was good with rhymes. Like, talking to Davey, who's still in the Navy, that was great.
So the great thing about this is you realize how on the nose his lyrics were. Like, he's talking, he's describing, and he says that, so one day I drove my motorcycle in the rain, and my wife says, you must be crazy. And I said, it's a lunatic you're looking for. And then I went down to my piano and I started to write it. He actually worked in the piano bar. I don't know if he was with a guy, Davey, yeah. who used to be in the Navy, but probably would be for life. Yeah, probably. The songs were just out of his life.
Huh. Honesty. Now, remember the song Honesty?
Like Taylor Swift, a lot of his songs were based
Everyone
on
is so yeah. untrue. Was that the disillusion part of his life? When it may have been
a disillusion one. Mm-hmm. There's one he wrote with his when he was breaking up with his first wife, which was kind of about how sadistic she was. I forget what it was.
Oh, really?
Zumba Stiletto or something.
That sounds familiar. Now, do you indict him for sexism on grounds of the song She's Always a Woman to Me? Ooh, she takes care of herself. And I think that's a pretty song. I think that's actually a pretty song. I mean, melodically.
Yeah. I indict him for nothing.
You're okay?
I'm okay with everything.
I mean, he was impressive. He did do the hits. You know, I thought Piano Man was a little, like, dense with rhyme and wordplay.
Try, We Didn't Start the Fire.
Yeah, but one could say the same thing about Hallelujah, if one wanted to, right?
Yeah,
that's in a more, like, highbrow way, a little dense with allusion and even so on. Well, I think it's what is it time for? I want to talk. I could talk a little about Trump, a little about Jeffrey Epstein. At some point, of course, we'll go into overtime, but not quite yet.
Is this some Epstein? You said you had some Epstein thoughts.
Yeah, I don't. No big finding. I just spent a little time in the rabbit hole. And so I'm not uncovering anything new. It's just that. I think last time when you said, what do you think the chances are that he committed suicide? I said, maybe a little under 50% to say more. I'd need to like go look at like the prison video. Well, I went and looked at the prison video, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of in favor of the murder hypothesis is the following. Now, I had been confused because initially, they said, well, the camera's monitoring his cell, and that area of the prison were, you know, mysteriously not working. And then when the Trump administration suddenly wanted to dispel suspicion about this whole thing, they released some video from that, you know, it's prison video. And I hadn't seen any of it. And I thought, well, wait, which is it? Blah, blah, blah. So here's the deal, as an earlier president of ours was inclined to say. There were five cameras in this unit. And the unit, mm-hmm. I guess SHU stands for Special Holding Unit, probably, right? It was an SHU, where they send special cases. And I can see why it would be that, because it's arranged such that all of the cells, there's either 24 or 32, because there's three or four halls that have eight cells, four on each side, and all of them are actually pretty close to this guard desk, because the guard desk, is like at the center of these several staircases, each of which goes up just like a few steps, like six, eight steps or something, mm-hmm. to this slightly higher level. It's kind of like a split level degree of elevation. And so there are these several staircases. Each leads to eight cells. One of them is Epstein's wing. Now, there are a total of five cameras. Three of them have a clear view of his cell. You can't go into the cell or out of the cell without being seen. None of those are working, Paul. None of those are working. Sadly, none of them are working. Then there's one that has no useful information whatsoever. It's just, you know, and it's not, you can tell nothing about who's going to his cell from it. And then there's one that, and this is the one where they showed his video from. It shows us the left-hand kind of edge of the staircase. This the sliver of the staircase going up to his cell block.
Okay.
And so that's the only one that was working. And so first of all, you know, this is kind of a Bayesian approach in a way.
If you, I was just going to say that.
What, it is, what, right? What want, it's like one of the chances. Yeah, go ahead.
What I want to know is how often were these cameras busted in general? If it turns out for the last 10 years, those cameras were only working 1% of the time, it means absolutely nothing that they didn't work for Epstein. On the other hand, if they work 99% of the time and just as soon as he enters the cell, poof, they're off. Right. Yeah, that's very different.
Or, you're right, I agree. Or if in this prison, there are several other things like this, where there's the guards SN36, you know, what were those like at the time?
Exactly.
Now, I would there's a separate, exactly. I mean, I thought, come on, if we were serious about this shit, this is the first thing they do, right? Like, and yet I'm not aware of anybody who's come up with those kinds of numbers. And it sounds, you know, the DOJ did this big report. Maybe it's in the big report. I don't know. I haven't read the whole report, but the DOJ, I guess, right away, maybe during the Trump administration, the first Trump administration did it. But the other question is kind of, well, let's assume that there's five cameras and only one of them is going to be working. Or to look at it another way, you're going to, what are the chances that if you darken four cameras randomly, that will include the three that had a clear view. But I would go further, actually, than that, because the camera that is working, it's kind of exactly the camera you'd want working. I would further say that if you're really going to plan a murder, and you're like, the first thing you say is, okay, we got to darken the three that can see his cell door. Well, what about these? What are we going to do with these two? Do we leave them both working? Do we leave one of them working? And that's like, or neither of them working. That's four possibilities. I would say they did the one, the case that there is here, the one that is working is exactly what you would do. You would say, first of all, we want to have this one where, because the way it works is if you're walking up that staircase without thinking about whether you're on camera, you will probably let your left arm, happen to be visible. Not necessarily.
I'm impressed. This is serious.
Thank you. But if you know about the camera and you want to go up and kill him, it's not hard at all to get up that staircase without being seen. Okay. So,
Hillary Clinton is a slim woman, could easily slide past it.
Exactly. Yeah. The first thing I thought.
So five cameras, there are 32 possibilities. Different being on or off, all the way from none of them work to all of them work, 32 different possibilities. To have those four on and one off is odds are one out of 32.
I'd have to do the math in my head, which I'm no longer good at, just to finish the thought, I think you would say, no, leave this one on, because then we can show it to people and they probably won't watch it. And they'll just read that, oh, there is a video, blah, 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 and nobody's walking upstairs, which was the case. And I would also say, and then the question arises, well, do you turn the camera off that can't see anything anyway? And I think you say, Yeah, you do, because otherwise people say there's only three cameras that can see a cell. They're all off and none of the other ones are. So this is like, this is what you would do. Now, so that alone, because, you know, as you said, we don't know how likely it was that at this prison, four would be off randomly anyway. Yep. But even assuming a number of random outages, this is an unlikely occurrence.
An unlikely combination.
That it's this optimal for whoever's trying to cover up the murder.
There's also an intermediate level conspiracy theory, which is that he wasn't murdered, but it may have been pretty clear he was suicidal. And that there were instructions or insinuations say, look, don't monitor him too closely. You know, yeah. If he managed to kill himself, that'd be a mighty nice thing. So don't have cameras on.
I did discover some things that seemed to work in the other direction. For example, the desk where the person usually is, they're not always there. They go off and do stuff. So somebody could go up the staircase without them knowing. And also, I'm not sure there isn't a rear entrance to the hall that Epstein's on. But it is true that there's almost no cells that you can directly see the door of from the desk where the guard is, more or less permanently stationed. But Epstein's is one. There's maybe one other out of like 24 or 32. I mean, it really does look as if whoever assigned him the cell, which of course it could be that there was a plot, but this person wasn't one of it. It looks like they wanted to maximize the visibility of his cell to the guard at the desk. That really kind of seems to be, because it's pretty I mean, this is the cell you would put the person that whose visibility you wanted to maximize in. So there's that kind of evidence too. And I have nothing more to say, except.
Well, so what do you make of the fact that his co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, who had this very long prison sentence, 50 years, has apparently been moved to a cushier prison in Texas? Which, if one didn't, I mean, first thing, like, how do they do that? Like, why would they just do, don't they need to explain why they're doing it? But anyway, seems to be consistent with the idea that Trump is nervous about something that she could reveal and wants to motivate her not to reveal it. Going up I to would, the true well, conspiracy I, theory that before he leaves his presidency, he will give her a pardon.
I had a slightly different theory. I mean, she was, she has been questioned by this Justice Department, right? Didn't she? Okay. So my theory was more like she kind of signaled that she's willing to play ball. Like she has no plans to reveal anything, which I would think is her stance anyway, because she may get killed.
Yeah.
You know, if she reveals stuff, I mean, assuming she thinks Epstein didn't commit suicide. But anyway, I was kind of thinking, you know, she just kind of signaled, I have nothing to say. And they're like, oh, good. Here's a little pat on the head. Here's a nicer prison. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
You would think Trump's paying a little bit of a price, because the people in his base who are most outraged about this stuff, presumably, they hear that she's been moved to a nicer prison, and they're like, you know, at least briefly up in arms. No,
you would think Trump would pay a price, but you know,
but you would think that a lot. And he often
you would have thought that a lot. Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. You know what Trump was posting on social media about Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, well, when he found out she was Republican, he said good things about her, right?
It is surprising that she's Republican. How many prominent Hollywood actors or actresses are Republican?
Well, you know, she apparently had tweeted in favor of Black Lives Matter at some point or something. So maybe
blue Lives Matter is the idea.
Really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
According to my extensive research.
Oh, I just saw BLM. I guess it matters what the B stands for. I'll take your word for it.
Oh, she posted a photo of a man with a Blue Lives Matter t-shirt at some point.
Okay. Which she means cops
also,
or what?
She is also
Blue Lives Matter means cops or what?
Yes, cops. Uh-huh. She is also, according to Times of India, showing up on my Google feed, spoke out in favor of issues like LGBTQ plus rights, transgender rights, and Black Lives Matter, and this pro-choice.
Oh, well, there you go.
So,
she had a little woke phase.
She's
like you in reverse. You like, and she did the magic chemistry. She turned you into a woke person. This controversy seems to have been the hinge, and she was moving the other direction. It's like ships passing in the night, Paul. It's kind of sad because in a different universe, you two might, who knows, you know?
I was going to make another connection, which is I'm looking at myself on the Zoom camera. I'm not Nordic in appearance.
No, that's true.
I'm the Sydney Sweeney of our podcast.
In fact, I've long had doubts about your professed ethnicity, frankly.
It is. Yeah. When I became editor of the journal Behavioral Brain Sciences, one of the first papers I handled and rejected, I got a very angry letter from the author. Now I'm kind of used to it, but I got a very angry letter from the author. And he said that he believed that I was pretending to be Jewish just to gain favor among academic circles.
And you changed your name to Bloom? I mean, Bloom is almost always a Jewish name, isn't it?
It is. No? It's, I think there's a German, B-L-U-M, and I think it could be some German, non-Jewish Germans, but it's typically Bloom and all of its variants, you know, Goldblum and so on, are typically Jewish.
And did you change your name to Bloom so that you could masquerade as Jewish?
I did not. I'm just one of those blonde Jewish guys.
Okay.
Sort of like, it happens. Anyway. I just wanted to make the connection between me and Sydney Sweeney even more interesting.
Yeah. No, I it's hard to think of one of you without thinking of the other.
So I'm out of Google searches. We'll just go crazy. Okay. So apparently Trump was going to start World War III to distract us from something.
Oh, you know, so Trump did these two things. I wanted to talk about this partly because I think the way the Times played it is interesting. The Times, I mean, what works in a media business model these days is to kind of be either on Team Red or Team Blue. And as a result, we've seen more, stories in purportedly straight news venues that are kind of editorializing a little. So Trump did these two things this week. One was Medvedev, this guy in Russia who used to be, nominally president, because I think even then Putin was the power behind the throne. And I hope I don't have it mixed up. It was president, prime minister. Yeah, he was nominally president. He said something that provoked Trump. And so Trump announced that he was moving to nuclear armed submarines in Russia. I mean, this guy, now he does have a job in the government. He's like deputy, I think it's like the equivalent of deputy national security advisor or something. So it's not nothing. But obviously, it's just Medvedev popping off. That's what he does. Yeah. He's kind of like, that's his role in the Russian ecosystem. Because nobody has any actual power other than Putin. And everybody needs to spend their time doing something. That's what he does. He pops off. And, you know, I mean, the funny thing about Trump is, I think even just in the first 6 months of this presidency, he has led people to take his threats significantly less seriously than they might have otherwise. He said so many things and backed off. You know, this TACO, Trump Always Chickens Out acronym has caught on with good reason. So when I read about this, I thought, oh, yeah, like that's going to scare him. On the other hand, you got to admit, it's pretty egregious for an American president to just casually. I mean, it is nuclear war, right? We supposedly treat that with a certain amount of gravitas. And so, yeah, that's pretty bad. But then the other thing he did, and what was interesting was the way the New York Times combined these two things into the lead story. Here's the physical New York Times I'm holding up.
That's very impressive. I haven't seen a physical copy for a while.
Yeah, I'm old school. Plus, I don't want to take my smartphone into the sauna. Sometimes after swimming, always after swimming, I go in the sauna. But
wait, sauna? Are you burying the lead? You go to the
I'm Nordic. I'm Nordic, Paul.
Is this one of those Russian saunas with mobsters and?
Yeah, I whip my back with eucalyptus branches.
That's the image. Yeah,
have you ever seen
go.
Those guys do this?
Yes,
you go into a sauna and there's Russian guys whipping themselves with eucalyptus or whatever it is.
And this happens with you while you're reading the New York Times.
It doesn't actually happen with me, but I have witnessed it.
Okay. quite the surprise.
What? Did they do it?
No, that you go to a sauna.
Oh, the reason is I like to sweat every day. And it, so usually, if I'm not doing, well, look, who gives a shit? Never mind. Anyway, you don't sweat much when you swim.
This episode is full of Easter eggs.
Especially if you swim as slowly as I do. And I would like to do a little. Anyway, I read the New York Times in the sauna poll. Now it can be told. Okay, wait, hold on. I'm getting distracted, Paul. Then the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I guess, was she the head of the BLS? Anyway, so the BLS, I think, revised its statistics downward. Yeah. Fairly dramatic. Now, it always does this. It always gives you the preliminary stats, and then I think a month later, it does a revision. And these were, I think, unemployment numbers. Yeah, it was a jobs report for July. And so Trump fired the person in charge of these stats. Now, first, I should say, there is nominally a kind of defense. What the Trump people say is, we didn't fire her for bringing us the bad news, the revision. We fired her because the revision was so unusually dramatic that she must have screwed up either at the front end or the back end. In other words, the preliminary estimate was really horrible, is what she's saying. Well, she's the one who did the preliminary estimate, so we're firing. To which I would reply, look, if you are going to, turn the global economy into your own little video game and every day threaten a new tariff that freaks everybody out, nobody knows what the hell to do, and not to mention all the other shit he does, I suspect that one consequence would be that you'll get more of this kind of thing. Where like 1 month it looks like this, a month later it looks like that. Just a guess, who knows? Anyway, the Times put these two together into Foes and Facts Expose a President's Volatility, the foe being Medvedev, the facts being the blah, 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 lashing out at Russian jobs. I just thought that was pretty creative, and I'm not sure I want to condemn it. I mean, it's funny. It is a good example of how consistently Trump does things that would have been considered scandalous by any president doing them. And yet, I'm slowly getting inured to them. I don't take much note to them. But anyway, what do you think of this? Is the lead?
I mean, so the headline could have been, like you're saying, you know, crazy shit that our president's done recently. That is just, under normal circumstances, unprecedented. I will add something else, and this is the video I was clicking on to remind myself of. Trump posts this video where he's sitting in the Oval Office with Obama. The video is a treat to watch. And FBI agents come, and while Trump is laughing, they wrestle Obama to the ground, and then we see Obama wearing an orange jumpsuit pacing around a prison cell. Now, under any circumstance, they could have put that in that New York Times article, you know, bad shit, crazy president does something crazy.
Yeah. They could have. Now there's another, the next day, New York Times, I'll talk about it in overtime. What else will we talk about in overtime?
Empathy.
Empathy, your favorite. I'm going to accuse you of like, really, I think you've jumped the self-promotion shark, Paul.
Boy, from you to say that.
Whoa!
No, sorry. You know that as soon as I said that, I regretted it.
Me? Mike Kinsley used to make fun of me for how little I promoted myself.
Really?
Yeah. He did.
I think you've learned your lesson.
Still
since
is. Then. What?
You learned your lesson since then. You talk. Actually, the truth is, to be fair, ongoing projects like your books, you're very quiet about.
I'm not that bad about it. So in the modern environment, are you kidding?
Yeah.
These people are monsters. They're self-promotional monsters.
It just seems that whenever I mention somebody, a famous, you will always know them. Now you just always know them.
I always do.
Yeah.
I have gotten worse about name dropping. And I think that is a sign of the kind of insecurity that sets in as you get older.
This is such an honest discussion we're having. Yeah, I find that too. You worry about becoming irrelevant.
You do.
So
you start saying, yeah, I knew Mike Kinsley. Yeah.
If somebody mentions like Al Gore to me, I'll say, I know a guy that Al Gore said something really nice about.
Oh, I discovered a Mike Kinsey memento today. I'll share it with us in overtime. The other thing is, I will accuse you, it is related to of being self-promotional to a truly, you know, unacceptable degree. And I just want to declare right now, not in overtime, that I will no longer accept it. Also, ChatGPT is GPT-5, which supposedly is going to show up any week now, going to blow our minds. And I want to talk about Sam Altman's peculiar genius for self-promotion, which is actually related to something you just said.
Okay.
So all that and maybe all more.
That and more.
I saw Gilded Age.
My wife and I'm watching Gilded Age. You watching it?
No, but we did watch a movie called The Friend with Naomi Watts. And do I have some shocking news about Naomi Watts' father? In fact, folks, that's just on the other side of the paywall. You can get to the other side of the paywall by becoming a paid subscriber to the Non-Zero newsletter or the Small Potatoes newsletter. If you choose the Small Potatoes newsletter, make sure it's the right Small Potatoes newsletter, folks.
If it's run by a rabbi, it's not the right one.
If it's run by a rabbi, no. You want it to be run by a Nordic fake Jewish guy, right? Is that the way you put
it? I really got to get some sleep before doing these things with you.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll see you on the other side, folks.